chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Hope you had a nice holiday and there are more to come. And right now may be the high point of my holiday. The studio here at KRCB is filled with the most delightful array of people perhaps ever in the history of Mouthful. It's really exciting for me to be able to bring you a glimpse into one of America's really most wonderful holiday traditions, and that is Bracebridge, which takes place at the Awani. And just a little bit of background about how I know about it, because it's fun. For years in the 70s, I had a boyfriend, we shall say, who really wanted to go. And I heard about it and was like the most elite of the elite possible thing. And you had to put your name in January, and there was a lottery, and maybe you'd get the opportunity to buy a ticket. And we were always going to do it, and we never did. And so it was just this really mysterious thing. And I'd seen the Awani once when I was in Yosemite in the summer, but I'd never seen it in the winter when I think it's really in its glory. And 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to go to another event at the Awani. And it was just wonderful to be there and walk in the snow and hear the rumors of the bears right outside and take the supposed 15-minute walk to the foot of Half Dome, which took about an hour and a half. The marketing person there says, oh, just walk over. You'll get to the foot in about 15 minutes. No, but it was still a wonderful walk, and I might not have gone if I knew it had been going to be, was going to be an hour and a half, especially since they talked about bears so much. But it's just a wonderful, magical place. And Bracebridge, which has been going on since I think the hotel opened in 1927. There we go. And that was the voice of Andrea Fulton, who is so astonishingly wonderful in Bracebridge. I can't even tell you. So during the show, make sure you have a piece of paper and a pencil just to jot down a little bit of contact information, and I'll tell you how to get more. I'm going to try to post a couple of articles I've written in the past about Bracebridge, and I'll tell you websites, phone numbers, and all that. And so on that note, I want to introduce everyone, if I can get it right, starting with you, Andrea Fulton. Thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And if I'm right, you're the executive producer?
Yes, I am. Executive producer and director.
We also have
I play one of the leading
Yes, you have a lead role. You are almost never off stage.
I work the show, so I can do it that way.
Good for you. You also have a performer, Jonathan Spencer.
Hello.
There you are. And we're sharing microphones because we have so many people. We have Melissa Wortman, who has a job I would, in another life, love to have. Costumes. And the costumes are magnificent.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Margot McCarty?
Yes.
Margot, there you are.
Hello.
Executive producer?
Yes.
And Michael McCarty, artistic producer, and Squire Bracebridge.
Yes.
And who did I leave out? Let's see. We've got some other people in the room watching, but I don't think they're going to be on mic. So first of all, I think we should probably tell, for people who don't know, what is Bracebridge?
Well, we'll be glad to take the mystery out of it for you. We have to, because we're the behind-the-scenes people. So behind the scenes, there is no mystery. Bracebridge is a marvelous, marvelous display of what life was like back in the 1600s in England. And it's a celebration of Christmas, of the holidays. And it happens at the Iwani Hotel in the magnificent dining room, a room that's 112 feet long with 50-foot beam ceilings. And during the Christmas time, it's made into a manor hall. And the manor hall belongs to Squire Bracebridge. And Squire Bracebridge was taken from a story about Washington by Washington Irving. And so Squire Bracebridge invites a panoply of people to come to Bracebridge Hall for Christmas dinner. And there's music and there's incredible food. Well, the music is incredible, too. And acting. And it is just an astonishing array of color and sound, and it happens in the most beautiful place in the world. And when you get into the dining room and you sit down and you see everything around you, and then you look outside and see the snow falling, it's totally magical.
That's certainly a good summary. One thing I think, you know, I don't know how much people remember of the history they learned in, you know, junior high, high school, but this all takes place just after the Restoration. And before that, it was for a time illegal to celebrate Christmas.
Oh, yes, the Puritans.
Christmas mm-hmm. was a work day. You were punished pretty severely mm-hmm. if you tried to celebrate the holiday. So it's coming out of this really dour and oppressive, fearful time. And
yes.
Suddenly it's like, hey, you can have a good time.
Yes, and not only, it was a gradual emergence from the Puritanism. And the thing that they felt safest with was the celebration of food. And so that's why food takes such a prominent role in the whole thing.
That's interesting that they felt safer in that way.
Yeah. I mean, Cromwell and the whole business, it was a very, very strict type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the religion seeped back into it gradually.
Uh-huh.
But they now had a wonderful, lively celebration.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the whole thing, it takes nearly 4 hours, doesn't it?
Just about, yes.
The Bracebridge dinner. Mm-hmm. And the guests who are attending the dinner, who are guests of the Iwani Hotel, they are enjoying dinner as the actors are also enjoying a dinner.
Well, the actors are not enjoying
dinner.
The actors are working.
The characters are enjoying the dinner.
Squire Bracebridge
and
his family sit at the head table.
Yeah.
Yes, and so they indeed are doing that.
And it unfolds mm-hmm. course by course.
Yes, it's a dinner theater, mm-hmm. basically, but I mean that describes it in a very small sense. It's a marvelous, marvelous dinner theater. And while all is happening around them, the guests eat, and it's really a terrific way, the way the food is presented to them. And it's just, there's music everywhere and laughter. Laughter is a huge part of the show. And people go away not knowing whether they're exhausted from laughing or exhausted from eating or exhausted from hearing the marvelous, marvelous sound in the room, the music.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about just one of the courses for the characters, not for the guests. We're going to have Percy Whiteley, the chef who handles all this. He is going to be talking to us in just a little bit. But one of the most dramatic courses is the peacock pie.
Ah, yes.
With the peacock and carried in mm-hmm. on a litter with four litter bearers.
Yes, it's absolutely marvelous. And every 10 or 15 years or so, we have to get a new peacock because of the molting situation. And so this last one is about 3 years old, and our technical director decided that it was not quite impressive enough in its original state, and so she added 1,300 peacock feathers to it and painted every one of the spines brown so they couldn't be, the light wouldn't show through them, and it now is 11 feet in scope. And it can barely get through the great big doors of the dining room. And it is impressive. And when the
chills.
Light shines down on it, it's just magnificent.
It's,
so we're indebted
so
to her for that.
Yeah, it's so gorgeous. How often do you change the costumes? Do they evolve or do they change?
Let me introduce this. the dinner has always been beautiful. But there's always been that extra step that I've wanted to take to really, really do something magnificent with it. And we had a couple of costume designers in the past 8 or so years that just didn't fill the bill. And then I heard of this wonderful person, Melissa Wortman. And I had heard of her before. In fact, I had met her many, many years ago. And we had her design one costume to see if she would kind of be up to snuff on it. Well, she was so much up to snuff that we absolutely captured her, and she will never get away. She does costumes that are of cinematic quality. They have detail. When you see films like Elizabeth I, every one of her costumes could be in there and be scrutinized up closely. And Melissa, talk about your costumes, please.
Well, thank you for all that. I don't know if they're quite that far, but costumes, I've been doing costumes for Bracebridge for, I think, 5 years now. It's my fifth year, And it's, we do, what, maybe 4 to 6 new costumes a year because they're very labor-intensive, very time-intensive to produce. And this is done over the course of the year in addition to handling the entire wardrobe for the show, which is in itself a monster job.
There's about 80 to 100 actors and extras?
For performers, what do we have? 40?
About 80. About 80 alt, but with the extras.
With the extras, it's about 80.
How much time do you spend on one of the ornate costumes?
Oh, geez. Gosh, I sort of hate to think about adding up the hours, but, you know, it's easily 120 to 160 hours per costume and can go up from there. You know, there was one that I did a couple of years ago that I'm sure went up from there. So, yeah. So it all depends on the nature of the costume. And it's it depends on the nature of the character. The nature of the performer is also a big aspect. You know, certain performers do, in my opinion, much better with a simpler costume, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's less time intensive to build. But, you know, and then
sometimes simple is even harder to create.
Exactly. Because you've got to come up with something that has some level of elegance, but still has to fit in within the context of the period, which is incredibly ornate, you know, and it's trying to find that line there. And then, of course, others, you know, depending on the character and the person who's wearing that, you can just go over the top in terms of how much detail you want to put into it, you know. So there are times. Time is what stops me. I would still keep going and going and going, but I run out of time. And you can ask anybody who's worked with me for my
many decades. They're getting
I don't even want to tell you.
Well, we all watch Project Runway now, so we know
it's Project Runway every day.
Project Runway. Yes.
Now, when I was there in 07, you had black and silver.
Yes,
costume
I did.
On that was just breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking. Was that new? What's the history of that particular costume?
That was new, and I'm supposed to be the housekeeper. Well, I am the housekeeper, and housekeepers normally don't dress like I do. But doggone it, once again, it's my show, and I'm going to do what I want to do. And so I got together with Melissa, and we designed a really beautiful, beautiful costume. And she said, you know, you're the housekeeper, not a queen. And so she said, I have designed a hat that you're just going to have to wear. And she pulled out of her bag of tricks this cute little white bonnet with a great big bow on it. She said, at least you're going to look from the chin up like a housekeeper. And so that's the one concession to being a housekeeper. But, oh, her costumes are so wonderful to wear. They're so substantial. And you feel like you're just draped in glory.
You are. Yeah. You are. Now, let's do a little bit of history before Percy's going to call in about 5 minutes. And there's a couple really interesting elements of history to Bracebridge. One is Ansel Adams.
Oh, yes. Ansel was the one that wrote the script for the show. After the first 2 years, there was a fellow who wrote a just a kind of a the bare bones of a script, and he died, and Ansel took over. And so he directed the show from 1929 to 1973. And, he was a force to be reckoned with. He was just bigger than life, and he used a photographer's eye in a theatrical situation, which sometimes took a very long time. We would sit at dress rehearsals, which started at about 11 o'clock, and we'd end up at 4 in the morning, and he would bring out ladders to turn one light about 2 inches, and that satisfied him. That satisfied his photographic eye. And, I grew up with him, and he was just a wonderful person, a talented man, mm-hmm. a character.
Now, he was a composer.
He wasn't a composer. Okay. No, he was going to be a pianist.
Okay.
He played very, very uh-huh. beautifully, and he had arthritis in his hands. And he just veered more toward the photography as time uh-huh. went on. So, and I have a photograph he took of me when I'm 5 years old.
Oh, gosh.
Looking, you know, happy as a clam being mm-hmm. in Yosemite. It was in his home, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. yeah.
And what was your father's role?
In the late 30s, my father was hired to be a singer. And after the war years, Ansel asked him to be the musical director. And so he directed the music, and my mother was one of the pianists, one of the accompanists. And when Ansel retired in 1973, my parents took over the direction of the show. And at that time, I was playing the minstrel. I think I played the part of the minstrel for about 18 years. And it was wonderful, really, having it a family affair. And then my father died on Christmas Eve, right after the dress rehearsal for the show. He was still in his costume, and he fell back and died in my mother's arms, which
gosh.
Is the most beautiful way to die and the most glorious place on earth with all your friends with you. And so his memory is still so, so much a part mm-hmm. of the whole thing.
And when was that?
And that was in 1978.
Uh-huh, 1978.
Yeah. And so I became the director at that time.
Uh-huh.
And so this is my 31st year of directing and my 60th year of being in the show.
Oh, that's just, that's remarkable.
It's remarkable that I've lived this long.
that's a long time to be doing any one thing and to be lucky enough to do it in such a gorgeous place. You must have seen astonishing changes over the years to both Bracebridge but also to Yosemite.
Oh, well, yes. Yes. I mean, it has gone from Yosemite Park and Curry Company, which was a very hands-on family type of company, to it was bought by a couple of other companies, and then MCA had it for 20 years, and so there was another feel to it. And now it's owned by Delaware North, and they mm-hmm. run all the concessions, and I must say they do a very wonderful job. And we have a tremendous president, Dan Jensen, or mm-hmm. COO, and he is all pro Bracebridge, and we really love him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how many people over a season? Now, if I have this right, there's 8 performances?
There are 8 performances.
Mm-hmm. And how many people can attend? Is it 300 each
300
performance?
300 for each performance,
okay.
Yes.
And how,
as they say, you do the math.
Say 8 times 3, 2,400,
yes.
Is that right? How long does it take you? When do preparations start?
In January.
Okay.
I take about 2 weeks to die. And
uh-huh.
then we start working on budget, and that's where my wonderful, wonderful team gets mm-hmm. into the beginning of it at each year. Margot is the financial person, and she handles things so beautifully. She does all the things that I was never good at, and she just excels. And Michael starts choosing all the music. So we take care of the finances, and we take care of the music, and then we mm-hmm. go down to Los Angeles, and we buy the fabric for the costumes, and we meet with Melissa and get all the designs. And it's a year-round thing,
mm-hmm.
planning rehearsal schedules, getting new singers if we need them.
Mm-hmm. So does the program change, evolve, that sort of thing? You say you choose the music, so it's not identical.
It's not. Yeah, the concerts change more frequently than the dinners do.
Uh-huh.
What we do, we have a system now that's very nice. We usually have a Christmas concert and then a musical theater or opera concert, some other type of concert. And so we now change them every other year. So each year there's a new concert going on. But we get to do all that rehearsing and perform them for 2 years. So it really works out well.
Uh-huh.
And those are on alternate nights from the dinner.
Oh.
So anyone who comes to the dinner, they usually stay two nights, either at the Lodge or the Iwani, and so they'll either have a concert and a dinner, or a dinner and a concert. So we make the entertainment happen all the time.
I think I missed the part about the concert.
Oh, it's a shame. They're really quite wonderful. Michael,
yes.
tell us about the concert.
Oh, my goodness. We do musical theater concerts, you know, just things from new shows, things from classic Broadway. Sometimes there's an intimate recital happening between just one or two singers. And then we've had glorious opera concerts. It's changed over the years. We used to have dancing in old Vienna. We've had different things through the years, just for additional entertainment for the guests.
Tell them about the quality of the singing.
Oh, the quality of the singing. Oh, and that's one of the fun parts about playing Squire Bracebridge is I get to sit and listen to the incredible singing of the group. The singers, high quality. Just they're so professional. They're well prepared. They know their stuff, and they just have a blast doing it. And it's just it's just a wonderful group to be involved with.
We have a lot of singers from the San Francisco Opera. And
they, oh, wonderful.
You know, yeah, it's very, very professional.
And how long have you been Squire Bracebridge?
This is my 10th season as Squire Bracebridge, my 23rd with Andrea Fulton Productions. It was Eugene Fulton, a chorale, when when I joined.
Is it hard to go back to real life when you're not the Squire anymore?
When I walk into work and the there's no trumpet fanfare.
I know.
The
once
month
you had
of
a
January
fanfare,
is very gloomy for me, definitely.
Now, and I would assume that certainly y'all have to live in Yosemite, obviously, during the, you know, the performances. But what about when the rest of the year when you're rehearsing? Do you rehearse in Yosemite or do you rehearse somewhere else and then you all truck over there at some point?
We actually rehearse in the Bay Area.
We hear you've brought a log from the forest, Nathaniel, my friend.
Aye, Squire Merrick, that we have. Do you recall the great tree by the river's bend?
The ancient oak? Indeed, I remember it well.
'Twas just this past year it died. That noble giant reached great age, and down it fell. We've chopped it all up and chosen a stout log to bring to you to burn in Yule fire and all winter through.
'Tis an excellent gift. We thank you all most heartily. The blazing logs will warm Bracebridge Hall through the cold winter days and bring light to our darkest nights. And if there be mistletoe among those branches, it shall be hung over our doorpost to impart its special kind of cheer.
But, Merrick, there be more to a tree than firewood and mistletoe. We folk who live and die and are buried in this great valley, we know there be spirits in a tree. Spirits that whisper to earth the secrets they learn from the sun. So when the log of a tree be set ablaze this cold December, we can do more than feel its heat and see its light. We can listen and hear what the tree has to tell us.
Come now, Nathaniel. I, for one, have never known a tree to speak.
If we close up our ears and open our hearts, we might hear the wisdom an old tree imparts. Though that oak be fallen, its logs go on burning to wisen our spirits till spring's returning. Just so, when we die, our heart's secrets burn on and will long after our bones shall be gone.
Ah, yes! Then our children and theirs shall carry away our spirits and our wisdom into their new day. Good folk of the forest, and young saplings all, a feast is set for you in the great hall. Go and sit by the fire, hear it crackle and snap. 'Tis your oak tree's log, telling secrets mayhap.
Well, as I promised, we have the chef from the Ahwahnee Hotel and the Bracebridge Dinner, Percy Whatley, joining us. Hi, Percy. Welcome to Mouthful.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
So you're getting ready with all your preparations. Actually, you have, you've just gone through Thanksgiving. And so what are your plans like for Bracebridge?
Bracebridge will consume about 14 days of our time during the holiday season, and we're really looking forward to it.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you shape your menu each year, what inspires you, other than, of course, Bracebridge itself? How do you translate a 16th century feast for a 21st century group of people?
Well, the menu is based, obviously, like you said, on the 16th century type of eating, style of eating. So, you know, the menu has progressed accordingly, you know, from lighter fare, like a relish plate, to obviously the heavier fare, and then dessert and some mulled wine. But we translated into a modern day style feast with the ingredients. We use very sustainable ingredients and shoot for really high quality, as well as local, as local as possible, and organic. We get our, most of our ingredients from the San Joaquin Valley, some from Sonoma, and other areas of California.
Yeah, I know one really year, the year I was there, I think you might have had Liberty Duck.
We do. It's Liberty. We're using actually Sonoma duck this time around, Moulard. We're looking forward to that.
Uh-huh. So this year's menu, I know you start out with pickled beets and fennel.
Mm-hmm.
You move on to a soup of cauliflower puree.
Correct.
And using a local olive oil, have you selected your olive oil yet?
Yeah, the olive oil comes from Skyhawk Olive Ranch in Angels Camp, California, isn't very far from
right,
us
Right,
yeah,
right
all.
Down there.
Yeah.
Then it looks like you have some of our favorite things, Dungeness crab,
yes,
which goes so lovely with avocado, and you have it in a timbale.
That's right.
And then tell us about what you're going to do for peacock pie.
The peacock pie is a roasted duck breast, and we're really looking forward to it. We're going to be sous vide-ing it this year, which brings us into the modern day from a cooking technique standpoint. Sous vide being a vacuum-packed duck breast, and we'll kind of poach it a little bit in some duck fat, just real lightly in the bag, and then we'll take it to a certain temperature, and the beauty of that is it never really goes above that temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So then we'll pull it out of the bag and crisp up the skin in a hot pan, and then we're able to just slice it and pretty much send it out the door. We're really looking forward to it.
You're making me really hungry, especially since I know that it's going to be finished with foie gras and butter sauce.
Right, right.
Next comes the big boar's head and baron of beef.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you tell us about that, too?
Well, the boar's head is, and the baron of beef is a kind of a play on words. It's not a pork dish at all, because you would think with the boar's head, but it's all beef. And we do, with our partnership with Brandt Farms down in Brawley, California, which is a small family-owned beef operation, and we are buying our tenderloins from them. So we do, it's almost always tenderloin at this meal. So a slow roasted tenderloin of beef sliced up, and the fun part about this is how to get all of 300 plus plates all mid rare. So everybody can enjoy a nice juicy piece of tenderloin. So there's quite the challenge in that as it is. So, you know, we're really looking forward to doing that.
Percy, even though it's difficult, you always succeed in that. Everybody seems to have a marvelous piece of beef.
You know, for serving 300 people all at one time, you really do a magnificent job. It is so hard. And hotel food, as good as it is, can sometimes just be...
You should see the choreography of the kitchen. He has things down to a science.
I was wondering how many people...
It's a beautiful thing to observe.
I've been in the kitchen, of course, not during service, but I've been in the kitchen. It's an enormous kitchen.
Yes.
How many people behind the scenes? I think you have 40 servers in the front, right? How many people behind the scenes does it take each night to pull off the Bracebridge dinner?
We have... there's 18 people on the hotline putting these plates up together, so... The way logistically it happens is we have 300 people, plus or minus a few, but basically 300 people. So we take we split the hotline into three stations, and every station has 100 plates. So we are able to provide a very quick plate up, even though 100 plates even seems daunting to many people out there in the restaurant world. We put four people at each station, so there's 12 on the hotline, and then there's three or four in the back running food and from the ovens and or holding boxes that might be holding the mashed potatoes or whatever it is. So they're running food to each of the three stations, and they're able to keep those stations stocked with the goods that are being plated up right at that moment. And then we'll put 300 plates together. The peacock pie is set up to where we have about 7.5 to 8 minutes before the food is actually processed out the dining room door from the kitchen. And then the beef takes about 12.5 to 13 minutes. It's actually written kind of in the script as to how long. We have our own back of the house script, and it's really very cool. We get a cue from the kitchen manager, and they say go, and we go, and you know we've pretty much got it down to a science, thanks to Andrea and her.
Well, your part is every bit as a big production as ours.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It goes hand in hand.
Yes.
Yeah, and Percy's wonderful to work with.
Right.
How tired are you after the end of the last one?
I can't afford to be tired.
Okay, you don't get like 2 weeks to stay
right
in bed.
Into New Year's. Yeah.
We go right into New Year's, and then we have about 6 days before we have to prepare for our chef's holidays.
Oh, right, so you have chef's holidays.
Yeah.
Chef's holidays comes after New Year's. Vintner's holidays is before the holidays, right?
Correct.
Is that right?
So,
yeah
we have just completed 3 weeks of Vintner's and Thanksgiving. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations to you. You do a fabulous job. How long have you been there at the Iwani?
My first day in this kitchen was in August of 1994. I've been a resident in Yosemite for 20 years, and I've been the chef here for 4 years. So it's just kind of this long ladder, 20-year-long ladder of climbing for me, and it's been, you know, very proud achievement to be kind of at the pinnacle of culinary achievement in Yosemite. It's a great place to be. It's a dream come true.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out on a Sunday evening to join us, and congratulations and good luck with this season.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, hope to see you soon.
Okay.
Pierre, darling, there you are. I was hoping you'd tell me you have something very special in your larder for this evening's very special occasion.
Why, yes, indeed. There's a handsome wild boar that was brought in only this morning.
Wild boar? Frankly, I'm not certain that pork is appropriate for our guests this evening. What about some roast beef? I do so admire those lovely loins of yours.
I'm immensely flattered, of course, but as to the selection of the entree, I feel the decision should be mine. After all, I'm the chef here, as you know.
C'est à la mode. Away he goes. He cooks all day.
I cook all night.
He starts again. It's sheer delight. Bouquet garni, that rare perfume, when steeped with chanterelle mushroom, is consommé so heavenly. Its flavors make a symphony.
A julienne, a fricassee, a cook it in a bain-marie, a sauté here, a purée there, ma sauce is très supérieure.
The side of beef, you will fillet.
The pork roulette, I do flambé.
Potatoes done up au gratin. I want to dance. Shall we pavane?
Ah.
We cook and dance, it's no disgrace. How else can one make bouillabaisse? A fish roux here, a pâté there, a soufflé simply gossamer.
A whiff of fiend's herb in the air.
Pâtisserie crème for my éclair.
We hope your appetite's too wet with terms like
a la rousse
blanquette.
Oh. The flavor of the plot du jour is better when its name's obscure. We never stoop to common slang. Not cookie.
Petit four.
Meringue.
Madame, monsieur, we love to see you cope with terminology. Enjoy the food you cannot spell. And we wish you all a joyeux Noël.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from our members and from the new Jack and Tony's on 4th Street in Santa Rosa's Old Railroad Square, offering American cuisine for the discerning palate. Reservations at 526-4347. And from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering Pinot and pizza Tuesday evening, and each Wednesday is Locals Night. Brunch served Saturday and Sunday. Rustic Italian atmosphere at Peter Lowell's Cafe. Online at peterlowells.com.
Present the gorgeous peacock pie with feathers spread and head held high.
Scholarly research reveals that on old Noah's Ark, vain brother peacock would do no work, but stand about all day and preen. His only business, being seen. Mrs. Noah, observing his unbridled vanity, was driven straight to the brink of profanity. "On this bloody boat," aloud she cried, and I think her good judgment cannot be denied, "every creature must bear its weight. Such indolence and sloth I'll not tolerate." So, with hatchet in hand and blood in her eye, then and there she created the first peacock pie.
I should tell you, you are listening to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB. I'm Michelle Jordan. Thanks for tuning in to what for me is a really exciting show. I'm just so happy, but now I want to go pack up my car and immediately drive to Yosemite. And if you haven't gone to Yosemite ever, if you haven't gone to Yosemite anytime soon, I really recommend it during the winter. It's not even that bad when it comes to the chains. If I can deal with it, anyone can deal with it. And it's just one of the, really is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And I'm so envious of all of you who get to spend tons of time there.
I wouldn't know what it would be like to have a Christmas not in Yosemite,
yeah.
And it is simply glorious.
Yeah.
There are very few people there in contrast to summertime. So mm-hmm. There's a peace that comes over the valley, and it's really, really extraordinary to be in this majesty of a place and have snow falling and just a beautiful feeling about things.
You must all know each other really well, too.
Oh, we do.
So now I want to spend some time with the performers. I got you all in here. So let's reintroduce. We've got Jonathan Spencer.
Yes, hello.
And I'm going to have to get you a little bit closer to that microphone.
Absolutely. Oops, I'll borrow that one. There we go.
And you've been with Bracebridge
1 year. Yeah, Michael was 20 plus years, and this is my second season, so coming up, and I'm a newbie to the
And
crowd.
Who are you in the...
Well, I am a lowly chorister, which is wonderful. Nobody is a lowly chorister, but I'm a wonderful addition to a already marvelous chorus. Andrea, what's the total number of choristers?
We have 32.
Mm-hmm. 32. Okay. Create the microphone back there. I've known Melissa almost 20 years now, so... Yeah. And she was instrumental in bringing me in, as well as another wonderful performer named Rick Williams, who the story goes that they had already cast a role last year, and a gentleman had to drop out for personal reasons, and they were looking for a baritone to come in on short notice and come in. And I had been approached at a very opportune time. I had an opening in my schedule, and I came and auditioned, and it all took about 2 days for
That's
it all to turn around.
That's the best way for things like
it
that
is
to
the
happen.
Best way.
That's great.
So it was a marvelous experience. Mm-hmm. Very, being a new person in this group is a race car. It's like getting in a fine-tuned machine and having to catch on to it as it's moving very fast. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful amount of people who have had this forward motion of the history of the event and the songs and the music that goes with it and the traditions that underlie it, and the show is so intricate and delightful and you're kind of watching going, okay, I'm going to stand there and I'm going to do this and then after about the first or second performance, you begin to feel the majesty of it and you can sit back and just absorb the wonder of the season and the sounds, and you can begin to live this time. Mm-hmm. I was telling Andrea that our first rehearsal back after this year, we were sitting there and we were going over the first piece of music that we do when we walk into the hall with the candles in our hands, and there's this wonderful lighting and pools of light everywhere, and you get to the stage, you turn back, and then you see Andrea coming down the aisle in her wonderful outfit, which we discovered a few moments ago. I discussed it, and she's backlit, and you see this light coming through her and around her, and it's marvelous to behold. And I started to be very emotional when I recalled that first experience when I got back into the rehearsal hall for this particular year. So, you live it. It's not a job. It is an experience.
Uh-huh. What were you doing before?
I was a performer with Lamplighters Music Theater for many years, and that's where I met many of the performers that I know through that organization. I have a real life outside of out of performance as well. I'm in the theater business and have worked there for many years, and just happened to have 2 weeks off that I could take.
In the theater business, in what capacity?
I'm a box office manager for a regional theater company.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, and it's a lot of fun to take some time and do actually performance on the side. I've been performing for over 20 years with Lamplighters and other theater companies around the area as well. Mm-hmm. But just the sheer number of talented people in this chorus is hard to believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, they mentioned the folks who are in the opera as well, but there are also musical theater people as well. There's a good mix of each different style, and so you get a chance to rub elbows with some pretty talented people. And this year, I have the pleasure of having my wife join me, which is even more exciting.
Cool.
She's a singer as well, and she is going to be performing her first year, so she gets to be the freshman.
Oh, cool. Oh, how fun. And Margo, you're co-executive producer.
Yes.
And you performed in the past, right?
This is correct.
Okay.
I started with the group in 1987, and I sang for the first 2 years. So that's how I started out.
Uh-huh.
And loved it.
Uh-huh.
Loved the performance time. And then Michael and I had our son, and I stepped out to raise our son.
Oh, how old is your son?
He's 18.
Uh-huh. You've accomplished your goal.
I have. I've and he's never had a Christmas outside of Bracebridge.
Oh,
poor
how
child.
Wonderful. okay, I'm trying to think. Who am I leaving? Oh, back to Squire Bracebridge. When you started out, you said you've been in, what, 20 years, 23 years?
This is our 23rd year, yes.
How did you start out?
Well, it was in 1987, got an invitation from Andrea to come and audition. She had an opening. Mm-hmm. And I went and sang, and she said, well, I'd like to invite you to come to Yosemite this year. So she told me a little bit about it, and I said, well, I'm a newlywed. We've only been married a few years. What's going to happen with my wife? I've never been away from my wife at Christmas. And she said, well, your wife would come with you. And then that's how we got Margot auditioned and her, to have her be part of the group as well. Mm-hmm. So I came in as part of the chorus.
Mm-hmm. And where do you live when you're during the season, when you're there in Yosemite? Where do you all live?
Well, Margot and I live in Benicia.
Oh, you live in Benicia mm-hmm. when you're not in Bracebridge.
Yes.
But when you're doing the play,
a lot of people think that we live up there the whole time, uh-huh. which is not at all the case. We're all from the Bay Area. Yeah. Not all. We have about uh-huh. four people who come up from Los Angeles for rehearsals uh-huh. and so forth. When we're at Yosemite, uh-huh. we stay at the lodge, uh-huh. and we have one building that's set aside for us, and it is Bracebridge Central. It's totally insane. And every once in a while, there's a vacant room, and they put a guest in there. And
oh, the
they
lucky
have
guest.
No idea what they're up against.
Oh, that would be, you know,
people
a blast.
Are rehearsing in the halls. There's a uh-huh. common hallway for all uh-huh. the rooms, and they rehearse and do all our dancing and so forth. And we quite often invite these people to our after show parties. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of self-defense.
Well, the lucky guests who get to do that. And we should talk a little bit about the practical element for the guest who's going.
Yes.
You definitely have to spend the night. You can't drive to Yosemite and leave.
You can, and people do
people
it.
People do? But, that's amazing.
Yeah, after having a little bit of wine, maybe some people don't drink it. I'm mm-hmm. sure some people don't, but you could, of course, drive. But if the dinner starts at 6 o'clock, and so if you're coming from Los Angeles or the Bay Area, it takes quite a while to get there, and then you have a very short amount of time to change into your evening regalia.
Into, yes, your ball yes. gowns and yeah. your tuxedos.
As
everyone
is
dresses.
True with just
oh,
about every
it's
resort.
Wonderful.
The rooms aren't available until about 4 or 4:30 in mm-hmm. the afternoon. That's a typical thing for all resorts. And so you have just a race to get dressed. Mm-hmm. So the best thing is to come the night before and come to the concert when you mm-hmm. have a nice leisurely dinner before the concert, and then have all day and then go to the dinner itself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's people, why I didn't go to the concert.
Because you
I had trouble on the road. I had trouble
mm-hmm.
on the road, and I got there. My windshield wipers started going out, and then it started snowing.
Oh. But, don't make that sound too disastrous.
But make sure your windshield wipers work.
Everybody should know there are rangers all over the place,
yes.
and there are people there to help you put your chains on.
Absolutely.
So all you have to do is lift a little finger and beckon, and they
yes,
come to help you.
They are
you.
There in a heartbeat
yes.
to put your chains on, and they do it so very fast.
Absolutely, they do.
Yes.
And all you have to do is smile.
Yes.
So,
and take
yeah.
out your credit card, but it's not much. It's worth every penny. It's some of the best money you can spend is
yes.
to have someone else mm-hmm. put
Could
it on.
Could I just
on.
Say one thing
sure.
about the very beginning of this uh-huh. whole process? For many years, we had a lottery.
Right.
And the lottery was instituted by the National Park Service because they felt that the situation wasn't quite fair, that the same people came back year after year after year after year. And so I guess it's been about 10 years now that we have not had a lottery, and it's a first-come, first-served type of thing. But that word hasn't seemed to get out, have gotten out. And so there are a lot of people who don't even try to get tickets anymore because they think it's still on a lottery basis. So mm-hmm. may I tell you all, it is not lottery. You can get tickets because we've added many, many dinners. This was back in the days when there were one and two dinners. We're just about sold out this year, but I mm-hmm. think there are probably a few seats left. Mm-hmm. So run, don't walk, but run to the phone mm-hmm. and call the Yosemite Reservations Department, and you'll get information
yes,
on
we'll
that
get,
later.
Yes, I'll get all that information. Mm-hmm. I'll get all the details. We'll have
yes.
all that
mm-hmm.
on. It's, I think, $375.
It's $375 for the most marvelous four-hour
yes.
show you've ever been to.
Absolutely.
And in doing yes. comparables for it, a couple of years ago, I decided we'd better find out what other people were charging. Well, first of all, there's nothing to equal this. And the things that were kind of moving close to this, where every bit as expensive as what we give them at the Iwani. Mm. So, and mm-hmm. you get a free concert tossed in, so it's definitely worth the mm-hmm. money.
And one of the things, it's so very easy, I think, to get terribly jaded about Christmas, especially if you listen to too many commercials. And the what really can get me jaded is when advertisements start talking about, you know, all of the different, the 12 days of Christmas is a countdown to shopping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just want to, like, let the whole thing out of your mind because it's so commercialized.
Because I have never been in the city during the Christmas season. Mm-hmm. Presents have never meant anything.
Yes.
It's all about being with wonderful people in a beautiful place and having music.
And you don't get to see all of the way that it's Christmas
no,
has become
and I'm so, happy
so commercialized.
About that. Oh, and children are just inundated with so many presents that are I don't know. I think that doing something that is more creative and soul-filling mm-hmm. is much more what I want in my life.
I was going to say, the best cure for a holiday cynicism, the best cure of all is to go to the Bracebridge
dinner.
And really,
holiday is a really appropriate word because, yes, it is Christmas, but there are so many people who come to the dinner who are not Christian. Mm-hmm. And so what we are doing is just encompassing all sorts of different traditions. A couple of years ago, we had a huge Hanukkah celebration and did a lot of Hanukkah music. We try to make it a joy for everybody to be there, no matter what their religious or ethnic conviction.
Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't feel any of the religious part of Christmas pressed down on me
at all.
It was just this human joy and magic. It was just wonderful.
Quite a few years ago, I wrote the opening lines, and it talks about the harmony of music and nature. And that really is what the whole dinner is about.
And remember, I recall a quote from Ansel Adams about the magnificence of nature there and that he saw the coming together of Bracebridge.
Yes.
And its location is this magnificent marriage between that sort of grandeur.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to thank all of you so much. It just makes me so happy that you are all able to be here. So let me introduce you again. We have newest to Bracebridge, Jonathan Spencer, who is in the chorus. We have Melissa Wortman, who does the most magnificent costumes. I can't wait to see more of them. They're just so rich and beautiful. We have Margo McCarty, co-executive producer. We have Michael McCarty, artistic producer, and Squire Bracebridge. Thank you so much,
Thank
Squire.
Thank you for having us.
And we have the truly magnificent and multi-talented Andrea Fulton. There's this wonderful little book called The Bracebridge Dinner that came out in 1983. You did the text.
Yes, I did write that, but we have a new book coming out in 2010, written by our official Bracebridge historian, and it has photographs by Lonnie Spicer, who does all our photography, and it's going to be magnificent. So we're really waiting for that to happen.
And we will tell you about that here on Mouthful next year.
The first day after Christmas, my true love and I had a fight. And so I chopped the pear tree down and burned it just for spite. Then with a single cartridge, I shot that blasted partridge. My true love gave to me. The second day after Christmas, I pulled on the old rubber gloves and very gently wrung the necks of both those turtle doves. My true love gave to me. The third day after Christmas, my mother caught the croup. I had to use the three French hens to make some chicken soup. The four calling birds were a big mistake, for their language was obscene. The five gold rings were completely fake, and they turned my fingers green. The sixth day after Christmas, the six laying geese wouldn't lay. I gave the whole darn gaggle what a mess I found. Oh, seven other swimming swans had drowned my true love, my true love, my true love gave to me. The eighth day after Christmas, before they could suspect, I bundled up the eight maids of milking, nine pipers piping, 10 ladies dancing, 11 lords of leaping, 12 drummers drumming. Well, actually, I kept one of the drummers. And sent them back collect. I wrote my true love, we are through love. And I said in so many words, furthermore, your Christmas gifts were for the
Oh, I should also have thanked Percy Whatley for taking time out on his busy Sunday evening dinner to call in to Mouthful this evening. We made a little mistake, too. The ticket prices for Bracebridge are actually $399 per person, and that includes tax and gratuity. There are a lot of special packages, too, that include lodging. There are three locations for lodging at Yosemite. Then they get you over to Bracebridge. If you can swing it, if you decide you're going and you can swing it, you really should stay at the Ahwahnee. It is a magnificent experience. The best way to get all of these details is to go to bracebridgedinners.com. It's not part of the Yosemite website. It's just all about Bracebridge. You can read about the history. You can see, I think, both the current menu and previous menus. And then there's a click-through that sends you to the Yosemite Events website, and you can get all the information you need about the various packages and how to make reservations. If you'd prefer to do it by phone, you can call 801-559-4884. That's 801-559-4884. You can also get all of these links on Mouthful's Facebook fan page, along with a picture of all the lovely people here in the studio with me. Finally, the music from tonight is off of a double CD, A Yosemite Christmas, The Bracebridge Dinner, and Music of the Christmas Season. And again, the night before Bracebridge, there's always a choral presentation that is part of the experience if you go for two nights. So I hope you've enjoyed this hour as much as I have. It's been a real thrill for me. And have a great weekend. Have a great week. And meet me back here next Sunday for another yummy episode of Mouthful.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out. Can blame them, wine to catch, crop growing strong.